It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. I'm Charity Nebbe. It's Horticulture Day today, and on a day when temperatures are dropping across the state, it seems fitting that it is our last weekly Horticulture Day until March. The show will be on pretty much every other week throughout the winter months, and as so much of life moves indoors, we're going to start off the hour by talking about houseplants today. Iowa State University Extension horticulturist Richard Giron is here. Hello, Richard.
Good morning.
And Linda Nave, ISU Extension Specialist in Value-Added Agriculture, is also with us. Hello, Linda.
Good morning, Charity.
And DNR District Forester Mark Vitosh is going to join us in just a few minutes. But let's start by talking about, first, not just houseplants, but a lot of people bring plants in this time of year or a few weeks ago, although I guess you could have left them outside until today, this year. When people bring plants in from outdoors, what do they need to do to make sure they have a healthy transition?
Well, the main thing is not to panic, because when you bring them inside, the growing conditions are quite different. The plants do become stressed, and they typically drop some leaves. So don't panic at that thought or that occurrence. Just try to find a suitable location indoors as best you can and give them good, consistent care. And if you do that, then they should be able to adapt to the indoor conditions and be okay. But they may lose some leaves for maybe a month or two.
Well, and the indoor conditions are so different from being outside during the summer months. Can a plant survive and thrive in the same way indoors?
Well, certain plants can and certain ones can't. There are certain plants that you can bring inside and they'll be fine. But for other plants, the growing conditions inside are just not good enough. They don't get enough light. The air inside is very dry. They're just not adapted to that situation. And so they may struggle. They may, in fact, die. That's why house plants are a small group of plants, because they can adapt to the indoor conditions pretty well, while most plants can't.
All right. And when we go through this big shift outdoors, the indoor environment does change also. So even if you have houseplants all summer long, things are going to be different for them in the winter, right?
Right.
That's right. Our indoor environment is drier, much drier than the outdoor environment, even during dry weather outside. So the indoor environment, we're looking at low humidity levels. Indoor environment this time of year, the day length is much shorter, and the light intensities are much shorter. So if you used to have a houseplant on the north or maybe the east side of the home and got plenty of light, during the winter months, that light level is much lower, so you may consider moving those plants that require a higher light level to maybe the south or a west window exposure, because the light levels will be so low in their usual spots.
All right, and of course, moving plants to the windows so they get more light seems like a really great idea. Do you have to be worried about the temperature of the window?
Definitely. Yes.
The foliage definitely should not touch the window, because that could actually damage or burn that foliage. So close enough where they get plenty of light, but not actually touching.
All right. Now, a lot of people have been asking us about bringing pests inside as they bring their outdoor plants in. We've talked a little bit about that. What are some of the signs that you see right away if you did accidentally bring pests in?
Well, you'll probably bring a few things in, maybe a few sow bugs or millipedes. They like damp places. They'll probably crawl away from the plant and not get very far and kind of shrivel up and die. So just take care of them when that happens. The other things that you might bring in would be maybe things like white flies or possibly aphids. You'll see those on occasion. And if you do that, you can use insecticidal soap on them, and that should help on as far as control.
All right. And we mentioned humidity being a lot lower. So how do you know how often you need to water?
That is such a variable, because it depends on, one, the plant's needs, two, the type of soil in the container, three, the type of container, do you have a drainage hole, the location where you have it sitting. Typically, if a plant has the right soil in a well-drained container with a drainage hole, and all the variables are good for that plant, in the winter months, the light levels are lower, so they're not going to require as much water. With that said, the air humidity is a little bit lower, so it might be sucking a little more water out because of the lower humidity level. But overall, reduce the amount of water. That would be a general assumption with the plants. Most plants will take a little bit less. Let the plant tell you what it needs. Some plants can handle just a little drooping. It's better than overwatering because many times houseplant enthusiasts kill their plants with kindness. Or on the other side, they forget about them. So there's kind of not much in between. They kill them with kindness or they forget about them and then they wilt. But some plants
so
can handle
them
a little
either
wilting.
Way.
Yes. On either side.
All right, so look for the wilting, not checking the soil or anything like that?
Yes, check the soil. If it's dry on the surface, chances are it needs water. Now, if we're having flowering plants right now, let's say our Christmas and Thanksgiving cactus, our orchids, African violets, when they're blooming, they will require a little bit more moisture than when they're just vegetative.
Now, when you do water, water thoroughly,
mm-hmm.
like you would basically all year round, but just water a little bit less frequently. That's the key there. So in the summertime, you may be watering every week or so. During the wintertime, maybe every 8, 9, 10 days.
Mm-hmm. All right. Now, let's talk about some of your favorite plants to have inside, because it's such a great time of year to have something green. To have something blooming is even better. What do you like to nurture inside?
Christmas cacti, holiday cacti. I have several. They're blooming right now. They basically kind of thrive on benign neglect, so they do very well indoors. I also have a clivia that does very nicely. You bring that inside in the fall. You basically find a place for it where it gets bright light. It doesn't need much watering at all. It kind of goes semi-dormant, and it starts to bloom basically in March. So two very easy-to-grow plants indoors.
And I tend to favor African violets. My mother was an African violet enthusiast, and so I think I've carry down that tradition, and I try to keep African violets blooming pretty much through the winter as best I can. As Richard was talking about with the holiday cacti, the Thanksgiving cactus and the Christmas cactus, they're also another one that you just basically water infrequently when they're vegetative, and then a little bit more, and they're so easy to take care of, and they don't require frequent repotting. As a matter of fact, you can leave them in the same soil, same container for a decade, and they're just as happy as clams. So anyway, that makes it real easy. People ask, you know, what's the difference between a Thanksgiving cactus and a Christmas cactus? They may think their Christmas cactus is blooming at Thanksgiving, and they wonder why. It could be that they have a Thanksgiving cactus. The difference is the each segment on the Thanksgiving cactus has the ends of those segments are pointy at the edges. They're very pointy. Whereas a Christmas cactus, which blooms a little later in the season, has a rounded or more smooth end of that segment. So that's how you can tell the difference besides their bloom time.
I had no idea.
And then there are hybrids, which makes it very confusing.
In the holiday season.
And then there's an Easter cactus. So you may have what you think is a Christmas cactus that doesn't bloom in the fall or winter, but it'll bloom next spring. So
well, and speaking of blooming, you said they do well with benign neglect, but mm-hmm. I mean, Richard, day length is important, and
yes.
Artificial lights can kind of mess that up,
yes.
Right?
In fact, I have several on a counter, and one side of the plant gets some light during the night, the other side does not, and so half the plant is blooming. The other side is not, so they're very sensitive to light.
Mm-hmm. All right, so if you want them to bloom during the appropriate holiday season, try not to give them a lot of artificial light, at least after sunset. You said African violets, Linda. I don't consider those to be easy plants. Are there other indoor plants for those of us who don't typically have green thumbs that are great for some greenery around the house, but don't need a lot of care?
You know, there are, like the Chinese evergreens, pothos, some of the yucca-type plants. They do very well indoors, can tolerate lower light levels very effectively, particularly like the Chinese evergreen. That does beautiful indoors in variegated varieties. Some of the ferns do fairly well. The fern, such as the Boston fern, though it will shed some leaves in the fall and it requires moderate moisture levels, it does fairly well under low light conditions as well. some other species that might be a good one. The philodendron handles low light levels and benign neglect as well. It's a great office plant, too, because it can handle those low light levels, very moderate to low moisture levels, somewhat tolerant of abuse.
And I would also add Norfolk Island pine and mm-hmm. peace lily. Very easy, both of them.
Yeah, all peace right. lily is an excellent one as well.
And a lot of these plants can be incredibly long-lived as well. Like you mentioned philodendron. I have a philodendron in my house that I take very poor care of that has survived for a long time, and it belonged to my grandmother. Mm-hmm. And she passed away back in, I guess that was 1998, so she had it for years before that. I mean, this can be an important part of your family for a really long time.
That's right. The jade plant is another good succulent that's beautiful with its fleshy leaves. And it, again, is very easy to grow. It requires a little more light than some of your tropical plants like the pothos and the philodendron. But it does beautifully indoors and handles neglect very well. Another one that's kind of fun to grow, and I've had one for several years, is a ponytail palm. These palms, like the parlor palm, the ponytail palm, again, are very easy to grow. They'll slough off a few leaves. It looks like they're dying, but just cut those off with the scissors near the point where it attaches to the plant, and it does very well. Puts on new growth. Once in a while, you may run into some insect problems if you have them outdoors, but they can be treated very easily.
All right. We're going to take a short break. We'll be back in just a few minutes. We've been talking about indoor plants, house plants, but of course we'll answer your questions about any of the plants in your life. Coming up in just a couple of minutes, DNR District Forester Mark Vitosh is going to join us, so he's here to be your tree expert today. You can give us a call at 866-780-9100. You can tweet us at IPR Talk. You can also send email to talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org. With me today, Iowa State University Extension horticulturist Richard Giron and Linda Nave, ISU Extension Specialist in Value-Added Agriculture. This is Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. I'm Charity Nebbe. It's Horticulture Day today, and you are welcome to join the conversation with your questions. 866-780-9100. You can tweet us at IPR Talk. You can send email to talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org. We've been talking about house plants so far, but you are welcome to ask any of your plant or tree questions. ISU Extension horticulturist Richard Giron is here, along with ISU Extension specialist in value-added agriculture, Linda Nave, and now DNR District Forester Mark Vitosh. Hi, Mark.
Good morning.
And we were just talking during the break. It's been pretty dry out there. So if you have newly planted trees, what should you be thinking about?
Yeah, I would say if you planted trees this spring or trees in the last 2 to 3 years, it would be a really good idea to go out today or, you know, sometime in the next couple of days and give them a really good soaking, be it 5 to 10 gallons per tree, depending on size. Really soak that in. You know, looking at the forecast, there's chances of rain off and on in the next 14 days, but to have a really good soaking before some really hard freezes, so you have some moisture in that soil, is actually good for the root system. So I would give those trees some water.
All right, so maybe get the trees watered and put the hoses away.
Well, actually, again, this forecast has been kind of funny. So if, you know, if it stays in the 40s and 50s over the next couple of weeks, I would not be afraid to give those trees a little water again. So unhook the hose, lay it next to it so you don't have freeze damage. But, you know, you may still, it could be beneficial in a couple weeks if we're still staying in the 40s or 50s.
All right, and if we haven't had much moisture.
Correct.
All right, let's get to the phones. 866-780-9100 is the number to call. Fred is on the line in Grinnell. Hi, Fred.
I want to do a reverse question. I planted some grass seed here about 3 weeks ago, and it supposedly had some rye in it. There's hardly any rye coming up, so we sprinkled some more rye. Should we soak that down a little bit so maybe it'll get a start?
Well,
the other question was, go ahead.
Do you have any growth at all at this point?
Some.
Okay. I would definitely water it, yes, because it has been dry. You need some water there for good germination and growth. Those little seedlings have a small root system. and it's been so dry, they just need some water. And I will keep on doing that until the ground actually freezes this winter.
What about those Iowa peaches, the blush-colored peaches? Stick those seeds in the ground this fall. You got an inch or two in the soil so you know where they're at next spring, see if they come up.
Right, right. They need to go through the cold period before the actual seed can germinate. So I would plant those maybe 1 or 2 inches deep. I might put some chicken wire fencing or hardware cloth over the area so the squirrels can't dig them up, and then promptly remove that next spring, and hopefully they'll germinate.
Thank you.
All right. Thanks a lot for your call, Fred. 866-780-9100 is the number. Next, let's go to Emily in Iowa City. Hello, Emily.
Hello. Can you hear me?
Yeah. What's your question?
My question is about my Chicago fig. I received a fig in the mail as a gift, and when it came last fall, it was like just a stick, you know, about maybe a foot and a half. And I potted it, and through the winter, it didn't do anything. This spring and summer, it grew beautifully. I took it outside. It loved the sun. It had big, beautiful leaves. And I've been struggling to find good information about my Chicago fig. At one point, I read something that said I should plant it. That made me very nervous. And so I pulled it indoors. I read that I should let it go dormant, so I pulled it away from the light. And I guess I just want to know, what's my long-term strategy here? I would like to keep it alive. I would like to eventually eat some figs.
Right. Mm-hmm. They're not well adapted to our climate. I would say if you have a unheated garage that stays consistently cold, let's say maybe upper 20s, 30s, low 40s, then the plant would stay dormant. It wouldn't harm the plant. It wouldn't kill the plant. But it wouldn't survive typically outdoors in the ground. If we have a typical Iowa winter outdoors, it's going to destroy the plant. So if you have a place where you can put it, where the temperature is consistently cold, but not extremely so, then it should be okay. It could be a root cellar, it could be a cave or whatever you might have, but it needs to be a cool location, but not extremely cold.
Okay.
And I would check it occasionally, too, in that location. And if the potting soil is getting extremely dry, go ahead and water it. But just leave it there and then take it out next spring and see what it does.
Okay. And do I need to continue to repot it? Or can I mean, I don't want to, you know, continue to sort of make the pot bigger and bigger to the point where I can't move it.
Well, you're probably going to have to as the plant gets bigger with age. Maybe every 2 years or so. And when you do that, maybe the new pot is maybe 1 or 2 inches larger in diameter. So not a huge increase in size, but do it gradually to allow that plant to grow.
Okay. Thank you so much. I really appreciate it.
All right. Thanks a lot for your call, Emily. 866-780-9100. Paula is up next in West Des Moines. Hi, Paula. Paula, are you there?
Yeah. Oh, yes, I am.
All right. What's your question?
Okay, every year my daughter gives me plants for Thanksgiving and Christmas, right? Mm-hmm. So last year she gave me 2 poinsettia plants, and the one died right away, which I expected it because I don't have a green thumb. Mm-hmm. But the other one lasted for about 8 months, and I was so happy. It was blooming. I was giving it the right amount of water and stuff. And then all of a sudden, after about 8 or 9 months, it just died, and I was very, very disappointed. So I don't know what happened.
Well, you can keep them from year to year. Typically, if you do, you want to bring them outside in the spring and leave them outside during the summer. They have to come inside before a frost or freeze in the fall. But the main thing with them is they're kind of finicky as far as watering. If you water them too often, if you keep them too wet, they will develop a root rot and die very suddenly. So typically what you want to do is, especially indoors, check them every other day or so. And when the soil surface becomes dry to the touch, go ahead and water them. Water them thoroughly and then come back in a few days and check again. So, but you can't keep them from year to year very easily.
All right, but if you want to keep them from year to year and get that beautiful color again,
that's the hang
trickier,
up.
Right?
That's the hang up, yes, because they are short day plants, which means that typically beginning the 1st of October, you need to provide darkness from 5 p.m. until 8 a.m. each day. Then you have to do this for 8 to 10 weeks. And you can do that by putting a box on them and then removing that in the morning. You can put them in a closet, whatever, but it does require your attention for basically 8 to 10 weeks.
Also, they do tend to get a little bit leggy if you just let the stems grow. So in the summer, you might want to pinch them back a little bit, which means just remove the terminal growth, maybe an inch or so, so that they branch out and are not quite such straight, narrow, straight, skinny stems. This will give you a better looking plant.
All right, and you can also
buy them.
Okay. There are certain gift plants that we call extended flower arrangements, basically. And some of those are our indoor mums, perhaps the cyclamen, the poinsettia, the Easter lily. They're fun plants to have. They do last longer than a flower arrangement, but when they finish blooming, sometimes it's just a good idea just to say goodbye.
I think a lot of us have a hard time with that, though. It just feels wrong to get rid of a living plant, but okay.
There's always compost.
Right.
Yes.
Paula, thank you so much for your call. It's Horticulture Day on Talk of Iowa. 866-780-9100 is the number to call. We've got an email question here from Jim. Regarding, this one's for you, Mark, invasive non-native bush honeysuckle taking over. He said, I live in a timbered area, and this summer my neighbor told me about this awful plant and to destroy every one of these by using a 50-50 Roundup solution or Tordon on the cut stump. Wish he had not told me about this now, as I am now obsessed with the removal and control. I've eliminated several hundred this fall. This would be an ongoing task for eternity. Problem is, if I control it on my 5 acres, there are 50 to 1,000 more acres around me that will not be controlled. Am I wasting my time? I like the fresh air and exercise, but this could get old really fast.
Jim, you're not wasting your time if you can make the commitment. If you accept that it's going to be a long-term effort and it's going to be an ongoing effort. The thing to think about, too, Jim, is not try to do it all in 1 year. You're not going to take care of it. To look at the other side, if you don't do it, even if it's not being done around you or in other areas where it's going to invade, if you really enjoy your woods and this is making it difficult for you to enjoy your woods, it gives you a great incentive to go out there and do something about it. Honeysuckle gets 8 to 10 feet tall. It shades out everything. So a lot of those native understory plants don't get a chance to get established. It can really promote potential erosion problems because basically it's just dirt underneath. So there's a lot of negative things related to that. So if you can accept that there's no silver bullet that's going to take care of it, that you just keep chipping it away, the one thing I would suggest is maybe avoid the Tordon. Tordon is one that can actually move out of the root system and leach out into the soil and maybe actually damage plants that you don't want to damage. Glyphosate or Roundup is okay. The other thing is when plants are smaller, I use the knee-high rule. If they're at my knee or lower, you can often pull those plants, and I just hang them up in another tree, let the roots dry out, so you wouldn't have to cut everything. Depending on the timber also, if he has a more mature stand of oak, in hickory, he may also look at prescribed fire to help every couple years to try to reduce those plants. So depending on the size of his timber, he may want to call his local district forester and get a look at it and come up with a long-term plan. But again, leaving them, I think, is a lot worse than going after it. And if he can accept that he's not going to solve it overnight, and if at least does it on his property, he's going to benefit, I think it's worth the effort.
All right. And this is one of your long-term hobbies as well.
It is one of my long-term hobbies. I do it on weekends on private land. So.
All right. Let's get back to the phones. Sharon is up next in Johnston. Hi, Sharon.
Hi. I brought in a tropical hibiscus plant that I had outside. I've never grown one before. And I brought it in about 3 weeks ago. Mm-hmm. And I was wondering... the tallest branches are maybe 2.5 to 3 feet tall. Should I trim that back, or should I wait till next spring before I put it back outside again?
I typically recommend don't do anything this winter. Just wait till next spring, see where the growth is. It might have some problems. You might find a better place to cut it next spring so it branches out more. But bringing your hibiscus in is a good idea. There are some certain things to be aware of. They do tend to get insects more so, and you bring them in, than some other plants. Be on the lookout for mealybugs, for example. Those are the little white insects that cover themselves with a cottony mass, so they're very visible to see. They can be wiped off with a soapy water solution and then rinsed. Fairly easy. You will get some blooms if you have it in a south exposure. So enjoy it, but just watch for the insects and keep it moderately moist. Don't let it get too dry because then it will drop its leaves. So don't let it dry out.
Mm-hmm. Okay, well, thank you for the information. Mm-hmm.
All right, thanks a lot for your call, Sharon. And Nate in Iowa City has mealybugs, so let's see if we... Oh, I think we already answered his question just there. I wanted to see if he had anything to add to it. Next up, Barb is on the line in Des Moines. Hi, Barb.
Hello. Thanks for taking my call. I have a Schifflera, and it's probably, maybe 5 feet tall. It's a big plant. I keep cutting it back. And during the summer, I put it out on the deck. And then during the winter, of course, it's inside. And it seems Mother Nature takes a much better care than I do. When it's inside, after a few weeks being inside, it starts developing a sticky substance. There's some little cobwebby white stuff sometimes in between. And it starts dropping leaves. And so I've had this plant for a long time. I went down to one plant shop. I took a leaf in, and the guy rushed outside, and he said I could wipe out his whole supply of plants with what that leaf had on it. And he told me to take every leaf and to wash it on both sides with a soapy water. Well, this plant is huge. I've done that numerous times. And then I was supposed to spray it with, I think it was called an eye balm. Yeah, that kind of worked, but that was pretty labor intensive. So then I went to another year to a garden supply place and just described it. I didn't take the leaf in, and they gave me some granular stuff that I was supposed to mix into the soil. That didn't work. So what should I do?
I think what you may have would be possibly scale, which is an insect. And as far as identifying it, what you see on the leaf would be just simply a bump. You don't see the typical body parts like heads and legs. You just see a bump.
And I see those, yes.
Okay. And what they're doing is they're sucking sap from the plant tissue. And they feed on the sugar within the plant sap. But then they have all this excess that they have to get rid of, so they excrete that. And then that falls on the lower leaves of the plant, on your table, on your carpeting below the plant. So you probably have scale. It's very, very hard to control scale because these are insects that have a protective covering. And most of your insecticides are contact-type insecticides, which means they have to come in contact with the insect. They can't because of that protective shell. So they're very hard to control. They do produce offspring. They call these crawlers. And they emerge from their mother, and they crawl about on the plant and begin to feed. And once they do that, they form this protective shell. So you can get them at the crawler stage, and you can use insecticidal soap. The problem is you never know when they're reproducing. So you have to spray on a regular basis, maybe every week or 10 days or maybe 2 or 3 months, which is hard to do. And then finally, sometimes the infestation becomes so bad that realistically you can't control them. And you might actually have to destroy the plant for that reason, because you just can't do it.
And the reaction of the person at the garden center, I mean, if she brings other plants into the house, this spreads?
Right. If they touch. If they touch, then they can crawl from one plant to the other. But the insects cannot fly, so if they're in a different room in the house or across the room in a corner, they'll be okay. But if they're touching, they can go from one plant to the next.
All right, Barb, does that answer your question?
So get rid of the plant.
Well, that's an option. Now, Now, you can still enjoy the plant. It's not going to kill it. The insects won't, but you do have that annoying aspect as far as the sap falling on maybe the carpeting or the table. But the plant itself will probably tolerate the presence of the insect. So if you can deal with the sap, you can still have the plant.
All right, Barb, thanks a lot for your call. We're going to take a break, and then we'll be back to answer more questions. 866-780-9100 is the number to call. With me this hour, Iowa State University Extension horticulturist Richard Giron, Lyndon Nave, Iowa State University Extension specialist in value-added agriculture, and Department of Natural Resources District Forester Mark Vitosh. We'll continue in a moment. This is Talk of Iowa. It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. I'm Charity Nebbe. It's Horticulture Day today. With me this hour, DNR District Forester Mark Vitosh, Linda Nave, Iowa State University Extension Specialist in Value-Added Agriculture, and ISU Extension Horticulture Specialist Richard Giron, here to answer your questions. 866-780-9100 is the number to call. Alyssa is on the line next in Stanwood. Hi, Alyssa.
Hello.
Hi. What's your question?
Yes, I bought a few in the spring, and I planted them. They were flowering already, but when I planted them, all the flowers went away, and they started flowering again in the fall.
Okay, mums. We missed the word mum, yeah. So I'll okay. Fill that in for mums. Richard and
yes.
Linda. Yep.
Yeah, and so I was wondering if there is what I need to do in order for them to survive the Iowa winter.
What I would do would be to go ahead and water them. They have a very shallow fibrous root system. It has been very dry recently. And then I would go out later on after it's been cold for a while, and I would leave them as they are. I wouldn't cut them back. But if you have some straw, some pine needles, I would place that around the plant so they have some winter protection. What that basically does is it prevents repeated freezing and thawing of the soil. And because they have a very shallow fibrous root system, if we have a lot of freezing and thawing, it may kind of heave the plant up out of the ground, and if it does, it's going to destroy the plant. So if you cover them with a little bit of straw, pine needles, then the ground, when it does freeze, it should stay frozen, and that should help them overwinter.
All right, Alyssa, thanks a lot for your call. And it's another case of letting something harden off before you put the mulch around it.
Yep.
Okay. Next, let's go to Eric on the line in Cedar Rapids. Hi, Eric.
Hi. I'm always looking for an excuse to burn timber or savanna or prairie, and I was curious about the oak wilt and the red oak and the fir oak blight and the white oak, and I was just curious if burning and getting rid of some of that duff layer in the leaves could slow down that fungus and maybe help with those two diseases.
That's a great question. I'll cover the oak wilt first. With oak wilt, that will have no impact. Timber burns will have no impact because the fruiting body of that particular fungus is actually underneath the bark, and it basically breaks out in the springtime or early summer, and sometimes through the summer, depending on the weather conditions and stuff, and that bark opens up, and the beetles that carry that fungus get in there. On bur oak blight, the jury is still out on that. The one thing we know is that actually overwinters on the petioles. The challenge is some of those leaves that do fall, if they have the fungus on it, that would minimize that some. But the thing that happens on bur oaks, a lot of those leaves often stay on the tree with that fungus still on it. And so in the springtime, those dead leaves are hanging there with the fungus on the petiole, and it basically just rains on the tree and reinfects the tree each year. So that wouldn't be a cure, but if a person was doing regular timber burns in an area of bur oak blight, that may help reduce it some, but it's not going to eliminate it.
All right. Eric, thanks a lot for your call. There are other benefits to timber burns. We were talking about honeysuckle control. That's one of them. What are the other major benefits?
A lot of different things. Just keeping, especially if we're looking at oak regeneration, if we have a more open oak woodland and we want to keep that way, we can keep out some of the aggressive sugar maple, black cherry, and some of those species. So then we can wait for the oak to get regenerated in those areas. And sometimes from a habitat aspect, we know historically a lot of our woodlands were more open oak type woodlands. And there's a number of different wildlife species that enjoy that kind of habitat. So there's a lot of different benefits to that. And recently, Monday, I was in a timber burning for that reason. But a day like today, you would not want to be burning. Very serious conditions. So you need to make sure the conditions are right. The other thing note to throw in there with timber burning is some people often think it's easier than prairies because they burn slower, they don't get as hot. But if you don't have the right conditions, you burn with too low humidities, high winds, and stuff like that, you can actually kill trees if you don't do it the right conditions. So it's a good tool, but you have to have a good plan, and you need to do it in the right conditions.
All right. Here's another oak question from Anne. I have a huge, beautiful bur oak, more than 6 feet circumference, that barely leafed out this year. I think it's dying, but I'm holding out hope. It hasn't shown signs of oak wilt, but the limbs were too high for me to get leaf samples. Do you think there's a chance this was just a bad year? If it does have to come down, do you know of anything special that might be done with the wood?
I think the thing, depending, I don't know where she's located. Did it say where she was located? The thing she needs to do is wait till next spring, see what happens, and then try to contact either a local district forester or county extension. Take some pictures, see what the symptoms are. It could be a lot of different things. I mean, it could be a tree that was stressed by construction a couple years ago, and it's slowly starting to decline because of that. Could be something about the site changes. Maybe it got too much water, not enough water. It's really hard to say. I think the big thing is to see what happens next spring. If it does start to come out, if it does show some symptoms, try to get some pictures, possibly if she can get some samples, send those into the plant disease clinic in Ames. If it completely dies, not knowing what it is, I would say if she could use it locally, if she has a place to burn it and stuff, I would do it that way instead of taking it somewhere else.
All right. This is a question from Chris. Could you please review timing for pruning oaks to prevent oak wilt? I want to do my pruning soon. What should I watch for?
We're on a roll. I was waiting for this question today. Last night, as I was riding home, there were still bugs in my eyes. And so as we get later in the season, we know with oak wilt, there's always a concern if you have open wounds, the beetle that can carry that fungus could carry it to those open wounds. We know as we get this late in the year, the potential for those bugs to actually be carrying that fungus are very, very low. But if you're like me and you want to be conservative and really be careful, I would wait here next couple weeks. I think I heard 28, maybe one of these days over the next couple days, nights. I would wait for a good or two hard frost, bugs stop flying, then go for it. And we really haven't had that in most locations, maybe parts of northern Iowa and stuff. But like I said, I know around the Iowa City, central Iowa, insects are still flying around. We really haven't had that really good killing frost. I'd wait for that good killing frost. Then you should be good to go, and I would stop before March 1st.
All right. Ricarda is on the line next in Coralville. Hello.
Hi.
What's your question?
I have a question about,
Go ahead.
Okay. I have a question about my Schefaleris, which is probably about 3.5 to 4 feet tall. And I gave it Miracle-Gro about 2 weeks ago. Not that I fed it because it looked like it needed feeding. It's stressing out. I didn't put it out this year. And anyway, it looks like it's dying. Should I repot it? I'm wondering if that might be a solution.
Now, you say you think it may be dying. What is it actually doing?
It's the leaves have got their tongues hanging out.
Okay, so they're kind of droopy.
I
would not repot because the plant obviously is having some problems. And if you repot, that's going to cause additional stress. So I would not. I would just try to give it good, consistent care and see if that is enough for the plant to recover. And so when you do water it thoroughly, then let it dry out nicely before you water again. I would not fertilize at this point. Basically, we don't fertilize during the winter months, basically November, December, January, February. So I wouldn't fertilize. So mainly just make sure it has plenty of bright light, make sure it's watered properly, and see if the plant might eventually recover. If not, unfortunately, you've lost it. But I will definitely not repot it at this point.
Okay, because there's a few leaves on it, a few bunches of leaves that look healthy, but a lot of it is droopy.
Yeah.
Can I ask you another question?
Quickly.
I have a hydrangea that's probably a foot tall. We just planted it this year. We got one new flower on it, and it's been hanging on for probably the last month.
Mm-hmm.
What do we do with that plant?
I would do nothing at this point. I would not prune it back at this point. Now, you can remove that spent flower head if you like. You can leave it. That's up to you. But I would not actually cut the plant itself back until maybe next spring.
Okay, great. And cover it up, protect it with straw or something like that?
What? Well, you could take some soil and maybe mound that up around the base and maybe cover the bottom 4 to 6 inches of the branches or shoots. Leave that in place until spring. Remove it in the spring. Then let it leaf out in the spring. And then after it's leafed out, cut out any dead wood.
All right. Thanks a lot for your call. Next up, Sarah in Des Moines. Hi, Sarah.
Hi.
Hi.
I had a question about fluoride burn and calathea plants. I have a lot of houseplants all over. I'm a huge fan of houseplants. And I have a few calatheas that they seem to do okay, but then they tend to get a lot of fluoride burn on them. And I was just wondering if there was any way to help prevent that aside from like a really expensive, you know, distilled water or anti-fluoridated water, if there was anything else that you would recommend to help treat them.
What kind of plant again, please?
Oh, a calathea plant, C-A-L-A-T-H-E-A.
I don't recognize that name offhand.
Okay.
and you're concerned about maybe using water that has impurities in it?
Yeah, just using regular tap water. I've read that because of the amount of fluoride sort of in our tap water, it can cause like a burning effect where they just get kind of crunchy or crispy on the ends.
Okay.
Sometimes they get little spots that are crunchy or crispy. So the leaf always kind of looks like it's burning a little bit.
All right, and it looks like the common names for this are peacock plant, zebra plant, rattlesnake plant.
Prayer plant.
Prayer plant, yeah.
Right, now we have it.
Yeah.
I was waiting, Richard. I was waiting.
Yeah.
So I guess I would use, if you need to, distilled water, very cheap. Rainwater should be fine.
Dehumidifier water, if you have a dehumidifier going in your basement, that would work very well, too.
All right. And is that a common problem?
It can be. Salt and other things can kind of burn the edges. Right. So the important thing is also when you water, really water well. And some water should come out the bottom of the pot. And then discard that excess water. Sometimes when you fertilize and your water has maybe some impurities, the salts can build up in the actual potting soil. But if you water thoroughly and discard the excess water, you're kind of flushing it out every time you water, and that tends not to happen as much.
All right, Sarah, thanks a lot for your call. Next, Jan, calling us from Wisconsin. Hi, Jan.
Hi. I had beautiful chocolate dahlias, Karma variety, and I dug up their tubers. It's the first time I've had dahlias and dug tubers. And they were beautiful and plump and abundant. And I put them in a cardboard box to dry out for the 3 days, which has turned into a week or so or more. And now there are a couple of them that are still, you know, kind of like turgid, like sweet potatoes. But most of them are like little sacks of elephant skin. And I don't know if I should moisten them before I put them in wood chips for the winter or...
I don't think I would. I don't think I would, but I would bury them in some type of material like either vermiculite, wood shaving, sawdust. Bury them completely, and I would do that as soon as possible so they don't lose any more moisture. and then store them in a cool, dry place where the temperature is around 40, 45 to 50. But I wouldn't add the water just because that may encourage them to rot. So, but bury them as soon as you can. Protect them as soon as you can so they don't dry out anymore.
All right, are you worried about them?
A little bit,
yes. Okay. All right, good luck, Jan. I hope that works out. Donna's up next in Waverly. Hi, Donna.
Hi. I have planted fall bulbs in a container and mm-hmm. have had contradicting advice on that. I'd like them just to bloom in the spring.
Okay, that can be done, but bulbs require some cool temperatures, and they require 13 to 15 weeks or more of cool temperatures. I don't mean freezing. Cool, like a florist when they're greenhouse when they're forcing tulips for spring display and for spring sales, they put them in a cooler. They keep that cooler about 43 degrees or so, and that will give it the cool temperatures it needs until you start to see a sprout coming up. You don't need to plant them as deeply as you would outdoors. You put them in a container, and because they can be right below the soil surface. But through the winter months, you need to keep them moist, keep them watered, but keep them cool. So what I would recommend is put them in a garage that's close to the house, or put them in a location, if you have one, that could maintain that cool temperature. Not fluctuating. It has to be a consistent cool temperature. And it doesn't need light. So if you want to put them in a box or something, insulate them, or an old styro cooler, something like that in your garage. But record the temperature, take a look at the temperature, and keep it that consistent. And when you start to see little shoots coming up, then you can take it out, and it should bloom well for you. But keep it moist. Take them out of that little styro cooler or whatever, and water them and keep that soil so it doesn't dry out bone dry.
And if you have a second refrigerator, that works terrific.
Yes.
All right. Donna, thanks a lot for your call in here. We'll have a quick lightning round. This one's from Earl. Good morning. Is it too late in the year to spray herbicide to control creeping Charlie?
You need to spray it twice. You don't have time to do both, so it may not be very effective. It's not too late to apply a broadleaf herbicide to kill things like clover, dandelions. You could probably do that next week, but with ground ivy, you typically need to do it twice, about a month apart.
All right.
Don't have time.
And how cold can it be to mow bluegrass without damaging it?
If it's above freezing, you can mow it.
All right, and we are out of time. Richard Giron, thank you very much.
You're welcome.
And we won't be on the air with Horticulture Day next Friday, but we'll be back the week after that. So everybody have a happy Thanksgiving. Iowa State University Extension horticulturist Richard Giron. Linda Nave, thank you.
Thank you. Nice to talk to you again.
ISU Extension Specialist in Value-Added Ag, Linda Nave, and DNR District Forester Mark Fittosh, thank you very much.
Always enjoyable.
This is Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. I'm Charity Nebbe.